Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information, or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites UpstateSwing.com and Smithsonian Magazine. Couple of jazzy questions today. Question number one, what is the origin of the word jazz? Is it A, it comes from the Creole term for the word improv? Is it B, it was originally a sexual term? Is it C, it was a short form of the name jasmine? Or was it D, it was a term used to denigrate information as poppycock or hogwash? Jazz, what did it originally mean anyway? And question number two, which decade in the U.S. is known as the Jazz Age? Was that A, 1900s, the first decade of the 20th century? Was it B, the 1920s, C, the 1940s, or D, the 1960s? The Jazz Age, when was that anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of November the 12th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1900 that American composer Aaron Copland was born. Copland was known for such compositions as Appalachian Spring and Fanfare for the Common Man. Born 1900 today, died of Alzheimer's disease at the age of 90 in 1990. And it was 60 years ago today, 1961, that the Tokens released their hit, The Lion Sleeps Tonight. A deem a whip, 1961, today.
It's just a disgrace, these thoughts that I think. When he holds me to him, I want to woo him. I want to undo him, and don't think I ain't. Head over high heels, I'm head over high heels. Head over high heels in love. I've never known such thrills, I can't believe how this feels.
Dolly Parton's Head Over High Heels introduces our country music news. This is published in Time magazine on the 4th of October, 2021. And it's written by Miley Cyrus. Title, Dolly Parton, Living Legend. Have you ever met anyone who doesn't love Dolly Parton? I never have. Dolly is not only my idol because of her incomparable career, she's also my role model because of her steadfast morals and values. At her core, she is the definition of a humanitarian. She's also the world's most impeccably purposeful walking contradiction, having developed her iconic look after being inspired by the town tramp. Now she's known as a saintly, even godlike figure.
Head over high.
Miley Cyrus says, I remember when she came in to do a table read for Hannah Montana in all her bedazzled glory. Her smell, the way her nails tapped the table, the sound it made when she flipped the pages of the script. I could see that she fascinated other people, too. A living fantasy was in front of us all. But though she created an identity that she downplays as being built on wigs, lots of gingham, and silicone, the foundation for this empire is actually her honesty, truth, and her faith. People look to Dolly for guidance, and she knows that. She wears that responsibility with the same grace and pride. She rocks a two-piece nudie suit. She recognizes how impactful her choices will be as one of the most iconic and powerful voices in country music. And she leaves no one behind. Dolly has diligently celebrated the queer community, and her Imagination Library provides millions of books for kids. The only thing Dolly loves more than glitter is children. Last year, she donated $1 million to COVID-19 vaccine research, which helped in critical early stages. There's a multitude of reasons why vaccination is important to protect other people, but it's also to get the show back on the road and bring live music to our audiences again. There's a theory that you shouldn't meet your heroes, but I wish everyone had the chance to meet Dolly Parton, because she's even better than your sparkliest dreams. She may be my fiery godmother, but I think she's that to everyone else, too. I'm happy to share her with the world. And in music research and technology, what is the Jew's harp? This is written in historicalfolktoys.com, 2004. The name Jew harp is a bit of a misnomer and does not hold merit. For 400 years, the instrument has been connected in English and called a Jew's harp since its earliest known mention in 1595. Prior to this, it was referred to as a Jew's trump. In Scotland and Northern Ireland, it was simply called a trump. The origin of Jews, J-E-W-E-S, is unknown. Regardless, the proper name, according to the Harvard Dictionary of Music, is Jew's harp, despite today's popular use of the name jaw harp. To play this instrument, hold the long neck end with the metal tongue toward your mouth, with your lips parted enough so that the tongue of the instrument may vibrate without touching your teeth. Press the metal tongue with your finger, pushing it away from the face. By changing the shape of your mouth, the air cavity changes, thus making it possible to play different notes. The world has given this mouth harp dozens of names. Germans called it a Maltomel, which means mouth drum. In Japan, it is called Kuchen. Russians called it Vargon, except in Siberia, where it's called Skiapensian. While in the French, go with the name Guimbard. In Norway, it is called a Munharpa. Even in England, the name Guga is also used. And as a last example, on the Indonesian island of Bali, it's called a Zhen Gong. In the past, these instruments have been made from wood or iron. A 1,000-year-old iron kuki was found in Japan in 1990. Multkoma frames have been discovered in Germany dating back to the 1400s. By the 16th century, Jew's harps were a common item of a peddler's stock of goods. The ironworks at Saugus, Massachusetts, near Boston, started producing Jew's harps as early as 1650. The Jew's harp was introduced to the New World, specifically South America, in 1593 by a Spanish exploratory party. 500 Jews' harps were part of a transaction used to acquire land from the natives. Jews' harps were also part of a trade deal with Native Americans to purchase Maryland. Jews' harps continued to be used to barter with Native Americans until the early 1800s. Archaeologists have discovered 17th and 18th century Jews' harps among Native artifacts from Maine to Florida. When an old Jews' harp was found, it usually was broken with the tongue missing. The majority of Jews' harps from the North American colonial period have been found in rubbish heaps and at the bottom of wells. The quantities and conditions suggest that they were played until they broke, and in significant numbers. Santana Smooth with Rob Thomas introduce our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Santana, Blessings and Miracles. It's an album review by Mark Hirsch, published in Entertainment Weekly, November 2021. More than 50 years ago, Carlos Santana and his namesake band set Woodstock on fire with a smoldering soul sacrifice. Two songs into his new album, Blessings and Miracles, the mystically minded guitarist offers up another Latin rock jam, Santana Celebration. The yawning gap between the young, urgent seeker of days gone by and the elder statesman of now can be gleaned from the titles of these two singles. One is all about the abandonment of ego in the pursuit of a higher calling. The other is about propping the artist up on a pedestal to be venerated as a legend. With the death last year of Black Magic Woman songwriter Peter Green, Santana, 74, may be the last in a line of musical heroes mining the cosmic consciousness of the 1960s. And there are times when it seems he's transcended human form to become a sentient guitar tone. But the song turns out to be more of a fake-out, given how often the legendary guitarist seems to be the weakest link on his own album. Take the song Move, for example, which reunites Santana with Rob Thomas more than two decades after Smooth became utterly inescapable to anyone within broadcast distance of a radio station. Even for those who got sick of that song, Move moves with a toughness in Thomas's voice and a driving groan that makes their latest collaboration Lean Back. Meanwhile, Santana himself simply winds his guitar around the singer, filling space. Likewise, a Steve Winwood-sung cover of A Whiter Shade of Pale is intriguing enough to wish for a version that keeps Winwood's vocals and loses Santana's over-punctuating sweet nothings. And with Living Colors' Corey Glover delivering the album's most powerful vocal, the fiercely spirited Peace Power gets by with or without the man whose name is above the title. But there are a few signs of life throughout, such as Breathing Underwater, featuring dreamy vocals from daughter Stella Santana and Angel Choir altogether, which features the late Chick Corea and runs closer to Latin jazz than rock. And while the fierce rhythm of Mother Yes sounds so much like Hendrix that you'd swear it was Lenny Kravitz, there's that classic tone again, unmistakably Santana. Even so, the parade of guests that turns his latest collaboration album into a semi-cynical ploy to reach every audience demographic at once does its darndest to sideline the man who's supposed to be the star. That Santana can still impose his stamp on a solid handful of tracks is absolutely worth celebrating. That he's unable to grab the spotlight on the rest of Blessings and Miracles offers a hint of what he sacrificed along the way. The album is given a C as a grade. And in local music news, we have this article entitled, A Rhodes Refrain. On fall break from college in the early 1980s, a writer and his loyal English setter took a road trip from Watauga County to the Qualla boundary, accompanied by the sweet sounds of fiddles, banjos, and high, lonesome harmonies. This is written by Mark Kemp, published in Our State magazine, October 20. 21. Fall foliage draped over Yadkin Valley like the patchwork quilt that my grandma tossed across an old rocking chair in her spare bedroom. Yellows, reds, and greens burst from a backdrop of dull brown. Standing at Elk Mountain Overlook in Watauga County, I breathed in the cool October air. Spanky, my English setter with floppy black ears and symmetrical spots on his head and back, sat dutifully by my side, tongue resting on his bottom canines and mouth forming what looked like a big, peaceful smile. It was fall break, and I needed the 260 miles of distance between myself and my English and philosophy classes back at East Carolina University. The day before, I'd packed my little Toyota Corolla with warm clothes, a knotty wooden walking stick, a Gibson Hummingbird guitar, and a 90-minute cassette tape scrawled with the title, My Home's Across the Blue Ridge Mountains. The plan was to drive solo along the Blue Ridge Parkway from Deep Gap down to Mingo Falls near Cherokee, stopping to hike and explore several spots along the way, Blowing Rock, Linville Falls, the Cradle of Forestry, and the Parkway's highest peak, Richland Balsam. Back at school, I was known as the Mixtape King, so it only made sense that I'd create a soundtrack for the trip. Songs drenched in fiddles and banjos, twangy voices backed by high lonesome harmonies and lyrics that complemented the rolling hills, gushing waterfalls, and little farmhouses tucked into the hollows, smoke puffing from their chimneys. We began our journey with Watson's amiable baritone bringing us out of Deep Gap and Dolly Parton's angelical voice taking us through Blowing Rock. As we headed on toward Grandfather Mountain, the Stanley Brothers were picking and harmonizing their way through How Mountain Girls Can Love. About three-quarters of the way through the tape, Flat and Scruggs' full-throttle hurricane of banjo, guitar, and fiddle on their famous instrumental Foggy Mountain Breakdown landed us at Linville Falls. Spanky loved two things in his short life, music and hiking. He'd been sitting in the passenger seat like a Buddha as the music played, the breeze from the window ruffling the red bandana around his neck, his eyes closed and mouth fixed in that permanent smile. Many years later, Spanky, long gone, a friend and I would retrace my route from Deep Gap to Mingo Falls, but we decided to continue beyond the Blue Ridge Parkway, taking U.S. Highway 74 toward Murphy. That night, we ended up at a little store called Clay's Corner in the tiny community of Brasstown. On this November night, only a handful of old men gathered at the back of the store, guitars and banjos in hands, jamming an old-time country and bluegrass songs. And as I recall correctly, those old pickers eventually made their way to their own ragged version of My Home's Across the Blue Ridge Mountains. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is the origin of the word jazz? Is it A, it comes from the Creole term for the word improv? Is it B, it was originally a sexual term? Is it C, it was a short form of the name jasmine? Or was it D, a term used to denigrate information as poppycock or hogwash? Correct answer, answer B, sex. As noted by Greg in SwingerReview.com, titled History of Jazz, the word jazz has a veil of mystery around it. Ask anyone what jazz is, and they can tell you about the music and describe how it's played or some of their favorite musicians. But the actual origin of the word itself is a bit of a mystery. Some research has suggested that it traces to African roots in some native language of former slaves, or even more evidence says it possibly is related to the French word jasseur, which means to chatter. Some historical evidence suggests that it could trace to slang terms for sexual functions. It is a fact that the term jazzing was used in the past as a term to describe having sex, but no one is sure if the term was used before the music came along or vice versa. One saxophone player said that the French had brought the perfume industry with them to New Orleans, and the oil of jasmine was a popular ingredient locally. To add it to a perfume was called jassing it up. The strong scent was popular in the red light district, where a working girl might approach a prospective customer and say, "Is jazz on your mind tonight, young fellow?" The term had become synonymous with erotic activity and came to be applied to the music as well. The spelling is another mystery, but there is historical evidence that in the early days it was J-A-S-S, not J-A-Z-Z, which would lead one to believe the perfume theory. A jazz trumpeter said the term was changed from J-A-S-S to J-A-Z-Z because children, and some adults, could not resist the temptation to scratch the letter J from the posters. Duke Ellington apparently did not care for the word at all, saying, "By and large, jazz always has been like the kind of man you wouldn't want your daughter to associate with." The word never lost its associative with those New Orleans bordellos. In the 30s and 40s, there were efforts by some magazines to change the name so that it wouldn't not be associated with sex by coming up with silly names like Ragtonia, Amera Music, and Crewcut, which, of course, did not catch on. It seems, though, that the stigma of the sexual references would have, for the most part, disappeared on their own, and jazz is now a proud American product that the world has embraced. And the answer to our second question, which decade in the U.S. is known as the jazz age? Is it A, 1900s, the first decade of the 20th century? Is it B, the 1920s, C, the 1940s, or D, the 1960s? Correct answer. Answer B, the 1920s is considered the jazz age because this was the time when jazz music blossomed and became tremendously popular. It was a golden age for the genre. Jazz music was the music of the younger generation. It was fast, heavily syncopated, and often made up on the spot through improvisation. As noted by Amy Henderson in a May 10, 2013 Smithsonian Magazine article, F. Scott Fitzgerald is credited with coining the phrase "the jazz age" in the title of his 1922 collection of short stories, Tales of the Jazz Age. He also became its effervescent chronicler in the early novels, This Side of Paradise and The Beautiful and the Damned, along with another short story collection, Flappers and Philosophers. Published in 1925, The Great Gatsby was the quintessence of this period of his work and evoked the romanticism and surface allure of his jazz age, years that began with the end of World War I, the advent of women's suffrage and prohibition, and collapsed with the Great Crash of 1929, years awash in bathtub gin and roars of generational rebellion. The 20s beat was urban and staccato. Out went genteel social dancing. In came the Charleston. Everything moved. Cars, planes, even motion pictures. Hair was bobbed. Cigarettes were the new diet fad. Like today, newness was fueled by innovation, and technology was transforming everyday life. Similar to the way social media and the iPhone shape our culture now, the 20s burst with the revolutionary impact of silent movies, radio, and recordings. New stars filled the mediascape, from Rudolph Valentino and Gloria Swanson to Paul Whiteman and the Gershwins, King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band, Louis Armstrong, Jelly Roll Morton, and Duke Ellington were but a few of the musical artists from this genre's beginnings. So who better to close out today's program than our regular jazz age artists, Duke Ellington, Angelica. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.